The GP Plus Careers Podcast.
Are you a GP hoping to diversify your career? Perhaps you've got a passion for women's health or have ambitions to be an expedition GP. Or maybe you've just always wondered, what would it be like to be a GP working in a prison? Well, this will hopefully be the podcast for you. My name's Sophie Lumley. I'm a First Five GP in the West Midlands and also a training programme director. I certainly fell into the above category, and I was keen to start this podcast to find out about the breadth of career options available to me, my colleagues and my trainees. I've been lucky enough to interview fellow GPs who've had some of these extra roles. They've told me what their role involves, how they got there, and the tips and advice that they have for those hoping to follow in their footsteps. I really hope you enjoy listening and feel as inspired as I have in speaking to them. So I'm really pleased today to be joined by John Diamond, who's a GP with an extended role in dermatology. So over to you, John. Can you tell us a little bit about who you are and what your role involves?
Hi, Sophie. I'm John Diamond. I'm a GP in Northern Ireland in a town called Macrofelt. We have a branch surgery in Ballaghy, which is the town where I grew up in as a child. So I'm the GP of the last 25 years or so in my hometown, which brings its own pleasures and difficulties. But it's been a great job and a wonderful career to have. About 10 to 15 years ago, I decided I wanted to do something a little bit more than general practice. So I did the Cardiff Diploma in Practical Dermatology. And from that, I was involved in setting up an elective dermatology practice within general practice for the region, which has now gone on to expand into gynecology clinics, vasectomy clinics, medical orthopedic clinics. So it's and I think at this stage there's been over 70,000 patients have been through our clinics. So it's been a work in progress. I've only been a tiny part of it. Another Dr. Siobhan McEntee, who has been the main, and Connor Bradley, who have been the mainstays of sort of running with it and getting it expanded and getting it running. But I was one of the first GPs to actually do the physical clinics in dermatology. So that's sort of my background. But I'm a full-time GP. And I do a little bit of dermatology on the side is the only way to describe it, really. So
awesome. And it's really nice to, I love meeting GPs who've been in the same area for years and years, because it's just their knowledge of their patient population is unbelievable.
It's wonderful. I have patients who have known me since I've been a baby, you know, and I have patients who I have given their baby vaccine to, I'm now giving baby vaccines to their babies, you know, so it very much is cradle to grave. And for me, it's actually a wonderful background knowledge to patients, because when patients come in, I know all their social history. I know who's married to who. I know who has fallen out with who. I know who's having an affair with who. Who's divorced who. I know all of this before I even start. So it's a great advantage, you know. And people know me just by my first name, you know, so because they've known me all their lives. So it's lovely, and it's wonderful, and I love looking after patients in my hometown. I love that aspect. It's the best part of my job, I have to say. But it does bring us difficulties, because they expect that little bit more from you, because they've known you all your days, you know. So, but that's fine. I'm happy enough with that, and that's honestly the best part of my job. And it's a thing I think nowadays that's sort of forgotten within general practice, that very much knowing your GP and working in the area where you're from is a wonderful thing. And I think currently that's been lost a little bit in the need for access and the need for targets and the need for running through hundreds and hundreds of contacts and patients and things like that. I think you lose that slightly more common touch that you get with being in a place for a long, long time.
So you have that amazing sort of well-grounded and holistic job side of things in the GP world. And then you decided to do dermatology. How's your time split between the sort of general practice side and the dermatology?
I'm a full-time GP, so I do 8 clinical sessions in the practice plus 1 or 2 admin sessions during the week. But I would have done 2 sessions per month of the elective derm work. But this is peculiar to Northern Ireland, but last year they cut the funding in half. So that was brought down to 1 session. I could do a whole podcast on the reasons why that was wrong, but they did it anyway. So that they cut it down to 1. So 1 session a month I do dermatology, where it's mainly inflammatory conditions, where the local GPs who find some of their inflammatory skin conditions a little more difficult to deal with, like your acnes, your eczemas, your psoriasis, your funny looking rashes, things like that, all come to me and I try and sort them out. And it's really to try to prevent them going on secondary care waiting lists, which, again, peculiar to Northern Ireland, are ridiculously long. And when I say long, a routine dermatology appointment in our region is 6 years, 7 years.
Wow.
Yeah. Currently in the Northern Trust where I work, a red flag referral to dermatology, the waiting list is 6 months. So if I have a
Wow.
melanoma at the moment in my area, if I refer it through to dermatology, patients can wait, sometimes expect to wait up to 6 months to get seen. That's how bad it is. So our elective derm clinic mops up a lot of stuff that hopefully doesn't make its way into secondary care.
That's quite the void, I suppose, between
It's
primary and secondary.
that's not just one specialty, that's every specialty, you know. We work really very much within a broken system in Northern Ireland. And I don't know what the solutions are. It's above my pay grade to sort these things out. But you end up just fighting a battle every day trying to get your patients seen. So it's not ideal. But the dermatology part of it, seeing the patients, I love that. I really enjoy that. It's part of the reason I like it is because it's nice and clean. There's not a lot of the social history that goes along with it. You know, there's not a lot of the mental illness goes along with it. It's just nice and clean, and I like that. And it's a nice counterpoint to everything else that I deal with during the day in the normal general practice.
How are patients sort of picked and chosen for to be seen by you rather than staying on that waiting list or being seen by somebody
Well,
else?
basically, it's inflammatory skin conditions. So anything that the local GPs suspect, we don't do lesions, if you know what I mean, because our consultant colleagues would be quite cross with us if we built in another delay into seeing us. To referring on for lesions. So anything that my local colleagues feel might be malignancy, might be something that they're worried about, that typically goes down the normal dermatology channels. But I'd say that the funny looking rashes, I don't know what this rash is. Can you have a look at it? The way we started it was basically, it was almost like a knock on the door. So if you have a colleague who has an interest in something down the corridor, you come and have a knock at the door and say, come and have a look at this and have a look at this and see what you think this is. And that's sort of the level that this is pitched at, you know. So, but over time, having dealt with more complex eczemas and psoriasis and acne, my local colleagues have got better and better and better at it because we talk about it and we train and we talk about people how to deal with these things. So they get better and better and better at it. So as time goes on, I get more and more difficult things to deal with, if you know what I mean. But that in a way is good. That means you're sort of disseminating knowledge throughout the local area, and my colleagues just get better and better at it, you know. There's advantages and disadvantages. In many ways, it gets a little bit harder. But in my mind, I think, well, that's actually a good thing because that means the patients are getting dealt with a little bit better by within their own practices, you know.
What led you to dermatology? Is that something that you've had an interest in before, or tell us a bit about that journey into it?
Yeah, I think what tends to happen with most GPs, certainly my experience is anyway, of a lot of GPs, what you find is that you'll start off and you'll get yourself, if you become a partner, it takes 4 or 5 years really to get yourself settled into the running of a partnership, the business aspect of it, and actually getting to know your patients. But after a period of time, you think, well, I would like to do something a little bit for me, if you know what I mean, that I'm interested in as such, you know. And that's not to say the general practice in itself isn't interesting enough. It is. But a lot of people will find something that the little niche that that sparks an interest in them. And for me, that was dermatology. I have another colleague who is a palliative care expert within our practice. I have another one who does a bit of orthopedics, another one who does a bit of gynae. So you find that within a partnership. GPs will have their own interests, which is a wonderful thing because it helps us all basically. And again, if I struggle with something, let's say gynae or orthopedic, I know there's one of my colleagues down the corridor. I can go and knock the door and say, "Come and have a look at this," you know. And that helps us all. So I had a spark of interest in dermatology, and then I did the Cardiff Diploma in Practical Dermatology, which is it's I couldn't recommend it highly enough. It's a really, really good course. When I signed up for it, I thought, okay, I've done other diplomas and for general practice, done the gynecology one, the DRCOG, and it was sort of a week's worth of study, and you go and do the exam, and you've got your diploma, and I thought, okay, this will sort of be like a, it's not. It is a proper year's academic work. They said it would be 10 hours a week. It is 10 hours a week, basically, because but you do come out of it really, really knowing a lot about dermatology. You would never sell yourself as a dermatologist at all, but for practical things that you see day to day, you're now able to put names on rashes. You're now able to decide, okay, I know how to treat this. I know what this is, you know, and that for me was a huge, huge advantage. I also did a dermoscopy course as well through Cardiff, which again is an excellent course. It's a 12-week course, quite recently there, and it's wonderful. But the practical dermatology course, I find a real great course to do, but it is the full academic year and it is 9 to 10 hours a week of work, both sort of researching and studying and being part of discussion groups and things like that. But I find it really enjoyable. I really enjoyed it.
And then how did you transition that sort of comprehensive learning and education you had in dermatology into doing dermatology, I suppose, and offering a service that was more than what your general practice colleagues were doing?
In our local region, there were jobs called gypsies, which were sort of within secondary care, but GPs did sessions within secondary care. Now, typically, these were supposed to be primary care facing, but they ended up never being like that. They all just were absorbed into service provision and secondary care. So I had in mind doing something like that. But then when I saw that they're just basically just working in a secondary care clinic, you know, I thought that's not for me. So with a couple of other colleagues, as I mentioned, Siobhan McEntee and Honor Bradley, they had this idea that we set up clinics actually that remain in the community in general practice. So I started off actually physically going around our local practices and doing maybe a clinic once every few weeks in their practice of their more difficult patients. That sort of grew, and then we got more and more people involved in different areas. So now the whole of the region is covered with GPs who have an interest in dermatology, who then have a central referral point who our GPs locally will refer into, and then they come to my practice where I do my clinic once a month, and as it was twice a month to see these patients. Then they decide, okay, we can do this for gynae. So we've coiled clinics and more complicated menopausal clinics and gynae clinics, which are full. We also have vasectomy clinics, you know, which are done within practice as well, the non-surgical vasectomies. We have orthopedic clinics who are doing joint injections as well, you know. So there's a whole gambit of stuff now that we're trying to do within primary care to try and relieve the waiting lists that are in secondary care. And as I said, to date, I think overall we've maybe 70,000 to 80,000 patients over the last 2 to 3 years have been through these clinics, you know. So it's not a small amount of people. It's a lot of patients who we feel we have kept from ending up on secondary care lists, because for sure these would have been, there's nowhere else for these people to go other than on the long, long waiting lists, you know. So we feel we've done some benefit, and that's why we're really frustrated when our clinics were cut in half in a cost-saving mechanism, which was hugely short-sighted. But now, believe it or not, the funding has come back again, so we may be able to double up again, but I don't know. We'll see how that goes.
Oh, well, hopefully, because it sounds like it's an invaluable service. And yeah, with such long waiting lists is a real necessity. I'm well impressed that you did this diploma and then immediately sort of set off with your own sort of service and your own service, and very much based in primary care, because a lot of people I've spoken to will go and work in secondary care first and gain those skills. Did you have any sort of, I suppose, oversight or supervision or access to an MDT or sort of access to dermatologists if there were things that you sort of felt, oh, I wasn't sure, or was your default that if it was something you didn't know about that you'd do a referral onto dermatology in the normal way?
Through doing the diploma, I came into contact with obviously some of our local consultant dermatologists. So you build up a relationship with them, and there is a sort of a pick up the phone, and if I have something difficult, I can talk to them about if I really need to. Because the clinic is inflammatory skin conditions, you're not cutting off potential malignancies. You're not doing anything like that. So there's no real need to be involved in MDTs. So that took away that need. And that was part of the reason why we don't do that, because if you're cutting off things, you really need to be linked to an MDT if you're doing that sort of thing. So that's part of the reason why we didn't do that, you know. But now in saying that, currently some of the ones who are more specialized in minor surgery are now cutting off BCCs. So there's a pilot going on at the minute within our elective care service for GPs who have done lots and lots of minor surgery, who are now taking people off, the simple ones off the list, and doing their excisions of uncomplicated BCCs to show that we can do this in primary care. I think over time, as the clinics have gone on, our consultant colleagues do gain an element of trust, if you know what I mean. And then that sort of, it allows us to do a little bit more, you know, and that's where the cutting off the BCCs has now come. I honestly think we had an Australian consultant over recently, and obviously in Australia it's very different. They have no problems cutting everything off and up on the high street, you know what I mean? But here it's slightly different, and NICAN and Northern Ireland Cancer Services don't really allow for us to do that. But I think as time goes on, that confidence will build, and we will be getting doing more and more and more of those things.
So it sounds like there's real evolution of a service, and that sort of competence across the system to offer those extra services.
It's exactly that. And that's, absolutely why we set it up within GP practice. We didn't want it, didn't really want it linked with secondary care at all, to a certain extent. And we wanted this to be a primary care thing, because the minute you start to properly link in with secondary care services, it just gets absorbed within the within their trust services, and you just basically become another cog in a service provision for them. So we wanted it to be sort of fleet of foot. GPs are brilliant at being dynamic and changing things if they're not working, whereas hospitals and trusts can't do that just so easily. They're big, clunky organizations, whereas small units of GPs can sort of change things and do things for their local areas, which big trusts really can't do. And that's why we really were keen that we kept it within our local federations, which are groups of GPs. And because of that, we've been able to do basically the, for as an example, for the vasectomy service, there's no secondary care vasectomy service in our region anymore. This is all done within primary care, all of it, you know. And secondary care, we're doing something like 400, the Royal, which is our local hospital, did something like 400 a year of vasectomies. We were able to do 4,000, you know. So it's just because we're much more fleet of foot, we can do things a lot more easily. It's less costly for a start, you know. So we get paid a sessional rate for doing a session, whatever that may entail. So there's not a cost per procedure as such, which sort of makes it much cheaper to do and much easier for us to do.
And I suppose taking you back to when you were starting out in dermatology, there'll be lots of people listening who perhaps have a real interest but haven't ever sort of had any specific experience or don't have a diploma. Are there other recommendations you have about how people can get into it, or other courses or things that they can get involved in or start doing that could start them along the right line?
Not everybody who's doing these clinics has done the Cardiff Diploma. We have lots of GPs who may have had exposure, just postgraduate exposure, rolling through dermatology posts for 6 months, you know. So we have lots of GPs who have done that. Within our elective, we have actually set up like a 12-week training program ourselves. So we did like a 12-modular thing ourselves, where the people who were interested in it, we said, okay, these are the basics. This is what you basically need. We would never pretend to be dermatologists. That's the absolute thing of this. This is just someone who has a little bit more knowledge than our colleagues. That's all that it is, you know. And I say, I go back to that knock on the door. You know, you might have an idea what this is. This is what this is. And this is what this service provides. So we have local GPs who have taken part in our 12 modular, which like one module will be on acne, one will be on eczema, one will be on urticaria, one will be on emollients, one will be on steroids, you know, so that sort of thing. So you just work gently through what is a little bit of an enhanced GP knowledge. That's what it is, you know. And that we've quite a few GPs who are running these clinics who have just worked their way through that system, you know. So, and other ones, as I say, who have maybe done some dermatology within their postgraduate training in hospitals and then found their way into general practice eventually. So this is just one, like, you know yourself, GPs, we're a disparate group. We have wide-ranging skills. So because of our postgraduate training, people will come from all different angles to general practice. You know, some will have done surgery, some will have done ENT, some will have done ophthalmology. All of those skills are brilliant, and all those skills can lend themselves to general practice. There's nothing that isn't useful, basically, you know. So what we tried to do is just enhance those skills a little bit from people who have an interest so that they can provide a service to the local patients.
Do you have any advice for people who would like to set up a similar sort of service or start thinking about doing that in terms of funding or getting off the ground? Because I think it's a lovely ideal in a lot of places that people would like to keep it in-house and in primary. Yeah. Obviously, getting the sort of funding to support that can be tricky.
Honestly, I would never lay any claim to that part of it at all. Dr. Siobhan McEntee, who heads one of our federations, who is a leader, who's one of the leaders in this, Siobhan has done all of this, so I cannot lay claim to any part other than actually just doing the clinics themselves. So basically, she lobbied, and between her and Sinead Eastwood, who are the federation, they have lobbied our Department of Health over months and months and months and years to get funding. Eventually, we got a little bit of funding. Then we proved we were successful and we could work within budget and meet all our targets. And that eventually led on from one thing. So success bred success, essentially. But I would never be able to lay claim to that. But they did a lot of hard work within the background to set all of that up, basically, you know. So literally, I would really lay claim to doing the clinics right at the start, but they've done all the hard yards with setting up the service, to be honest.
But I suppose it's a really important message in pairing up. I think a lot of people think, well, I have to do this in isolation and I have to do my own service and this, that, and the other. But actually, pairing up with your colleague down the road who happens to be good at accessing funding or got a similar interest is a really good way about setting up these sort of things.
Gather a few like-minded people around you and go for it. That's what I would say. If you see a need within your area, gather a few people around you and you'll soon identify who holds the purse strings, lobby like hell. And that's how it works, you know, and that's sort of how it worked for us, basically. So you got to be persistent. But if you gather a few like-minded people, you don't have to do it all yourself at all, you know, get a few people around you who have a similar sort of vision. There's no doubt, I've been lucky in having those people who know how to do these things and are just brilliant at these things and have done similar things before, and they have set it up and they have got the right people around them as well, you know, to do it. So I would never lay claim to anything I say other than just doing the clinics myself.
You've spoken quite a bit about the benefits for you and clearly for your patient population of offering this service and you having these extra skills. Are there any downsides, do you think, about being a GP with an extended role or special interest in dermatology that you think it's worth people thinking about before they embark on that journey?
I've really enjoyed it. It gives me great pleasure doing that clinic. I don't find it tiresome at all to do it. There's no doubt it's extra work, you know. It's above and beyond what is it my was nor my normal full-time job, but I actually don't get frustrated by it at all. I quite enjoy doing it. People are really thankful because they know the waiting lists in our region, so they're really thankful if they're able to see somebody who might be able to sort out their problems. So patients generally are really appreciate the service that we give, you know, and we do feedback surveys and things like that, and they're always hugely, hugely positive, you know, because people know how difficult it is in our region to get sorted, you know. So I say if they feel somebody at least has a half an idea that might get them fixed, they're pleased with that, you know. And that sustains it for me, that feedback. The patients like it, you know, and I like the discipline itself. I quite like dermatology. I'm quite a visual learner anyway, and it sort of suits my eye to sort of do that sort of stuff. But I say everybody's different, you know. And what I would say is after 4 or 5 years, if you're just new to general practice, don't be afraid to have a look at other things, you know. Don't be afraid to do, because it will sustain you through your career if you have something that keeps you mentally stimulated that you actually enjoy outside of the normal, which can be a grind sometimes, normal general practice, just but so something interesting outside that is a useful thing to have, be that, I don't know, whatever specialty you like, you know. It doesn't have to be dermatology, but any specialty, you know. If you find you have a skill in it, there's always some avenue where you can use that skill. Certainly within my own practice, I have a partnership of 4 partners and we've 2 salaried. The derm tends to end on my lap all the time, you know. So I do a lot of derm even within my own practice, but that's fine because one of my partners gets all the gynae, and, you know, another one gets a lot of the palliative care stuff. But that's how general practice, group practice works, you know. You all have your different interests and skills.
And you're clearly well networked within Northern Ireland, and you've got this amazing service that you're offering now to thousands of patients locally. Are you networked with anyone sort of nationally, just thinking about people who might be starting up or thinking about starting up in other areas?
Yeah, well, the name of our organisation is GPECS, GPECS, and Siobhan and Connor and Sinead do network with training opportunities with other regions. I don't know exactly where, but I do know that they link in, and we did a draft set of guidelines for managing simple conditions, but we've taken a lot of those guidelines from other people who've previously done the work, if you know what I mean. So there's no point in reinventing the wheel. So we've taken a lot of stuff from other regions that's fed into ours, you know. I think probably it'd be worth getting Dr. McEntee on for a podcast just to talk about how she set up the GPECS, because that in itself is a body of work that she should be very proud of, you know.
Well, we will, certainly be in touch, and it'd be interesting to signpost people to that GPEx website so they can have a look at some of your guidelines and some of the services and training that you offer. Just thinking now about someone who sat there thinking, yep, this sounds like a bit of me. I'd really like to build an extra interest, as you say. I love my GP role, but I want to do something else. Do you have any sort of just thinking of sort of top tips for getting started? What do you think people should do first?
Okay, I know locally quite a few of the consultants are quite happy for people to come in and observe their clinics if you've an interest, and in that specialty. So I would probably start by going and sitting in a few secondary care clinics, just voluntarily go on a wee look and see if it's something that you would like. I think if you've been exposed to something postgraduate that you like, seek out some qualifications. Seek out, there's diplomas all over the place for these things, sort of things, So seek out a little extra qualification that you might have that somebody else might not have, and then get a few like-minded people together, and then see, is there something you can do locally, even within your own town, within three or four practices that you can do, and then if you can prove that you can do that, try and seek funding for that. That's the simple pathway. Or just do it for your own practice. There's no disadvantage by going and have a special skill where you can help to look after your own patients. That in itself, if you keep it within your own practice, you'll benefit your own patients even by doing that. Do you know what I mean? Like, our practice list is 10,000 patients. If I never did another elective dermatology clinic, at least I feel my skills would benefit the 10,000 patients in my practice, So that there's an, you don't have to, that doesn't have to be an all singing, all dancing elective care service. It just benefits your own group of patients that you look after.
And that's a really, really nice message, actually, because I think lots of people, start thinking about being a GP with an extended role and having their own clinic and a huge service that goes alongside it. But actually, enhancing your skills for the patients that you already look after in practice may evolve into something more and offering a specific service locally, but also may just enhance the care that you're able to give to the patients that you look after in practice. So I think that's a really nice
Yeah,
message.
it's exactly that. And as the saying goes, in the land of the blind, the one-eyed man is king, So, if you have an interest that your partners don't have, they will naturally gravitate towards you to try and sort out those things. And then that stimulates you to do more reading and more learning, and you eventually find you know more and more about a particular subject. And again, you will find if you gain these skills and these qualifications, a lot of times something will. I know secondary care clinics are mad keen, always looking for GPs to step up to help provide service. And if that's what you want to do, do that as well. Do you know what I mean? Because these things are paid at a sessional rate. That's how it tends to work. So lots of the younger GPs now have portfolio careers. Not all GPs are partners. So you can do a bit of general practice. You can do a bit of secondary care within whatever service that you're or whatever specialty you're interested in. But certainly, if you have an interest in a particular specialty, I'd go and seek out a couple of qualifications, a couple of extra qualifications, whatever that may be, and start from there.
Awesome. I think I certainly feel inspired. And I think it's just, it's start with the patients, start with your interests, build the team around you, and then start sort of surveying whether it's for you. Sit in some clinics and do some qualifications if that suits, and then take it from there. And these things do often evolve, I think, in particularly for GPs, the amount of GPs that you speak to who say, well, I sort of happened upon this, and then this happened, and then this happened, and now look where I am. I have been asking people to end with their top tip or highlight or the best moment that they've had in their GP as an extended role, a role that they have.
The satisfaction that I get out of people who I know are going to be on a huge long waiting list that I have actually fixed and made better. I can think of dozens of patients where that has happened, where they've maybe had terrible eczema or terrible acne or terrible psoriasis or a funny looking rash that somebody couldn't diagnose, and because of my knowledge, bit of extra knowledge, I know what it is and I've been able to fix it. That gives me huge satisfaction, and the fact that patients are thankful for anything that you do, which in the current climate within primary care sometimes isn't the case. But in this clinic that I do, particularly, patients really are thankful for what you do for them, and that gives me great satisfaction. So I'd say probably that, I think.
Amazing. And I think, it's such a nice thing to be able to turn around and say, well, I've saved you 6 years of waiting for this treatment that actually I can advise you to have now that makes such a difference to people often. It's amazing how much skin conditions can affect people's lives. I know for a fact that lots and lots of GPs are interested in dermatology because I get asked about it all the time. And I'm sure it's given people food for thought and starting them out in the right direction. So thanks for sharing your story with us. with us.
Not at all, Sophie. Thanks for having me.
We hope that this careers podcast has motivated and inspired you to explore the variety of career options available as a GP. Speak to your appraiser, your local training programme directors, or perhaps join our RCGP mentoring programme for further support to diversify your career. Thanks for listening and good luck.
The GP Plus Careers Podcast.